the amount of extra return that you're going to get when you actually take the time to talk with somebody, understand what they're working on, what they're going through, and how you might be able to help with your product or service is insanely higher than if you're doing this automated stuff that, you know, maybe they'll remember you, probably not. They see 1,000 of these things a day. But if you stop and you take that time to make a real connection, that's where you have this real power. And you don't have to do a ton of it. You can do a few a day, like 3 or 4 a day, but you keep doing that every single day for 2 years. And all of a sudden you do have a couple thousand people that are on your side, and that's your team, that's your tribe, that's your army. They want to help you. They want to share your stuff. They want to promote you.
You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
On Hooked on Startups this week, I am absolutely delighted to have none other than Josh Hayman. Josh, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So Josh, you're the co-founder of Interact, which is the company that makes it easy for businesses to generate leads and drive sales using quizzes, which is fantastic. It's something that I come across every day, and I'm sort of half tempted. You know, you think, well, no, I'm just going to ignore that. But then there's one or two that pop out and you go, yeah, you know, I might just give that a go. And they are such fun. So at the end of it, you think, well, I don't mind, you know, here's my details, because you get that sort of warm, glowing, buzzy feeling that, you know, maybe I am in love. Maybe I'm going to be a superhero.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy the amount of people that I talk to that have the same exact situation. And they always come in to me with this weird perception that, like, no one knows that they take quizzes, but I know that everybody does. And so they're like, oh yeah, like, don't tell anyone. But I actually end up taking those quizzes all the time on Facebook myself. And it's everybody. I was helping out at my sister is an elementary school teacher. I was talking at her career day, and the elementary school kids loved taking the quizzes. But then we also work with brands like Jiffy Lube, and they create quizzes that are taken by men, primarily 65 and older. So it's literally across the board. As much as you can get, this quiz concept just really dives into people, and people love taking them. They just can't get over it. So, and it's a very visceral kind of thing.
Well, let's deconstruct a quiz. So tell us a bit more about Interact and how it works.
Yeah, so Interact is a service that companies pay for. So you pay for a subscription in order to be able to make quizzes on behalf of your brand. So you are, let's say you're a coffee company and you want to make quizzes like, what kind of coffee drink are you? You make that quiz, you can white label it so it's got your branding on it. And then in that quiz, you can use it to collect new contacts for your business. So after somebody answers all the questions of the quiz, a form comes up and says, enter your email to see what kind of coffee drink you are, and we'll send you discounts in the future on our coffee beans or maybe in our stores. And if you enter your email, that email will go to that company's email list. And then you'll be able to see what kind of coffee drink you are in real time in the quiz. So we provide the platform for companies to create quizzes like that on behalf of their own brand, so they can reach people on social media and attract them, draw them in, collect contacts from them that go to that company's email list. So that is what we sell as an ongoing service.
Because the war, as my dear friend Sanyika Street put in this fabulous piece he wrote, the war is for attention now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is the quiz one of the ways of creating a trade or a transaction where you're saying, I'll give you something of value to you if you give me something of value to me?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're totally right that it is a war for attention. And the analogy that I always make with people is, if you're a marketer, you are competing directly with whatever shenanigans Trump is into today, and also whatever the Kardashians are up to today. And those are really hard things to compete with, because those headlines are catchy. They have, you know, potentially ramifications for your life, if it's the president or if it's the Kardashians, doesn't, but you think it does. And, you know, it's, you're in that market and you have to figure out a way to capture people's attention in that space. And you don't get a buy just because you're a marketer and you're representing a brand that has a good message. So a quiz does an amazing job of getting in there, competing for people's attention, grabbing those people's attention, and then getting them onto your side. So you're kind of pulling them out of the ruckus into your world. And then once they're in your world, you use the quiz to engage them, introduce yourself, have this conversation back and forth using the questions. And then you're able to capture their contact information as well. And if you do that, then all of a sudden you're in their pocket. So you've just gone from this nebulous world where everybody's clicking on stuff about the Kardashians to having your access to somebody's pocket via email through their phone. So that's what a quiz does, is it draws these people in and does this amazing job of competing for you out on the front lines.
And do you find that the quality of the responses, because I think one of the big problems that's come up recently about Facebook is the percentage of clicks that happen from bots and other, you know, non-valuable devices.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that you have to think about. And the way that you think about it with quizzes is a popular quiz is almost always going to be in the format of which blank are you, or what kind of blank are you? So if you think about it, what kind of coffee drink are you? What kind of shrimp are you? All that kind of stuff all fits into that same category. And the way to make sure that you're reaching the audience you want is to insert into the blank something that only appeals to the audience you want. So if you're reaching business owners, what kind of business owner are you? If you're reaching entrepreneurs, what kind of entrepreneur are you? So now you're using this part that's really popular, which is the which blank are you, but you're also only attracting the audience you want by having that blank represent an interest that you only, that you know the audience you want only is interested in. So that's how you kind of filter everybody out. And we've actually seen a lot of cases where you're getting much higher quality because you are able to filter people out in that way. But since it's attracting people as well, it's not a higher cost. So higher quality, not a higher cost.
And because what you're doing is you're filtering people through content rather than through targeting. Because I think if you go on Facebook any day, you'll see 50 different courses and 50 different approaches that people take to say, you know, you need to write your ads. It doesn't matter how you write your ads if you get your targeting right. And someone else will say, well, don't worry about the targeting. If the ad is right and the content is correct, that's what's going to get people's imagination. So what you're saying is that it's much more about the content and the engagement itself. So you can actually go out to a much wider audience because the ad will be self-selecting to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I think that's actually the way to almost hack advertising, because Facebook's got all these targeting metrics and other social networks and things do as well, advertising platforms. But they'll charge you more if you're being really specific. And oftentimes their targeting, while it is very specific, also eliminates some people that you might want just because they don't fall into this exact right bucket. So the thing that's really magic about having a message that is on brand and only attracts the type of people you want is that you can go after a broader net, which brings your cost per click and your cost per lead down, but the content itself is filtering people out. And even within the quizzes, you can filter people out. So you can say, if people answer the questions a certain way, I don't want to follow up with them. And so you can actually use a broad net with your advertising, which is the best way to get, you know, cheap acquisition, and then use the quiz itself, the content of the quiz and the way it operates to filter people out and put them into the right bucket. You know, these are the hot ones. These are the ones like, not so much. And these are the ones that I just don't want to deal with. So you're able to handle all of that within this quiz concept and then go out and get yourself some really low cost leads.
And again, because this comes down to content, and all, in my opinion and my experience, all the really successful online marketers focus on content. And we talk about the hacking communities, and there are methods and there are tools to help you access certain demographics. But ultimately, what separates the successful, the really successful, from those that are either, you know, complete failures or not terribly successful, is that the content is lacking. So how important is it for you to build quizzes, and how do you do that? How do you create the quizzes that really capture people's imagination?
Yeah, so that's a huge question. And it's something that I've written quite literally 1,000 articles about, because there's so much to it and there's so much psychology behind everything. There's so much behind what goes into these things. And it is such a new thing. We never work with people that have done quizzes before. So this is the first time literally for everyone. And what we've done at this point is taken all that writing and all the metrics that we have within our system. So we've had 45,000 quizzes made that have been taken tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of times. And we've crunched all the numbers and we've created templates, which are pre-made quizzes for every industry you can imagine. So we've got 60 industries. If you're in the entrepreneurial space, if you're in jewelry, if you're in fashion, if you're in coffee, you can select one of those categories. And then it's going to show you pre-made quizzes, which are built on our best practices. And you can load those in and then modify them to your liking, rather than having to come up with everything from the beginning. Because back in the day when we were getting started, we would ask people to create everything from scratch. And we have people that are still working on it. And it's been 4 years. So we...
But that data... So you're almost approaching, you know, with 100 million responses... You're almost approaching sort of, you know, big data stuff.
It's insane data. I mean, the amount of gigabytes of data that comes through our system on the monthly is insane. So we're collecting just an insane amount of data points, and we're able to crunch all of that using different databases and sequences and stuff that we have on our side to then spin up using essentially artificial intelligence, because we're using that big data to then create templates and help other people create the best possible quizzes without having to come up with the concepts or the questions or the results or any of that themselves.
Which is very similar to where the real value is in Facebook.
Yeah.
It's the ability to predict outcomes based on your markets. So is that something that is something that you didn't predict that you would get this sort of take up, or that this, and you talk about the overlay of AI. I mean, it'd be very interesting to find out a little bit more about that. But did you imagine that you'd be sitting here talking to someone saying that you've got over 100 million different, you know, responses?
Yeah, it still blows me away. I mean, I always kind of hearken it back to this town where I grew up, which is called Turlock. It's 70,000 people. It's in the Central Valley of California. And every time I think about these numbers, because these numbers are just so ridiculously large that it's easy to get lost. It's 100 million. That's like, what is that? And I think back to all of the people in Turlock taking one of the quizzes created on our platform. The amount of times that that has happened at this point is just insane. It's ridiculous. So it really is baffling to me how big of a number that is. And it's not something that I ever anticipated happening. You know, I would have been happy at the beginning if we had, you know, reached a few thousand people or maybe 100,000, but then it started to be millions and then tens of millions and now over 100 million. And it's just crazy to think about the scale. And, you know, as you kind of hit these milestones, your expectations readjust. So you're like, okay, well, we got 1 million. Now let's get 10 million. We got 10 million. Let's get 100 million. We got 100 million. Let's get 1 billion. Why not? And then all of a sudden you're in these insanely large numbers, and that's where we are now.
Which is, but let's go back to the beginning. So, I mean, your company's been in business for 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, about 4.5.
But the beginning was, your story is the archetypical story of pure dogged determination, going up against the big boys and winning. You weren't funded by a VC. You weren't one of these high-tech ivory tower types that pretty much had it laid out to you on a plate. You know, your story is one of a business that came out of an idea and you bootstrapped it, you geared up, you know, you maxed out your credit cards to the point where, was it 8 months before you got your first client?
Yeah, it was 8 months before we got anybody to sign up and pay. And then after we got people to sign up and pay, we had an initial kind of spark where we got about 100 paying customers within 6 or 8 months. But then it really started to level off. And we did not get past, I think, 200 paying customers, which is just not much, for 3 years. So not only did it take 8 months to get anybody, but then it took an additional 3 years before we were at 200. And then in the last 10 months, we've grown to 1,000 paying customers. So it's like 5x'd. But that initial time was very, very slow in retrospect.
Yeah, and I want to explore how you managed to find it within you to actually keep going and not, you know, just basically say this isn't going to work. But how did you come up with the idea in the first place? So what made you think this is it? And what gave you that ability just to drive through thick and thin to get to where you are today?
Yeah, so the initial idea is part of what was the drive to keep going. So Matt's my co-founder in the company. We used to be web consultants. So we would build website properties for people, their entire website, all of their marketing, their email list, that kind of stuff. And we work with clients for 6 or 8 months, sometimes a year, and they'd pay a good amount of money, $30,000, $40,000 to do all of these services. And then we'd finish these websites and all they ever asked us about was how many new contacts they got on their email list. And we wanted to show them all the flashy stuff we had made, all the cool animations and like all the ways we had done marketing. But they didn't care. They just wanted to know how many new contacts did I get. And so we knew that we had that data point. And then one of our clients who was a sales consultant asked us to make him a quiz. And the quiz was, what type of salesperson are you? We put it as basically his homepage. And when we built these websites, they would convert at about 1%. So yeah, 1 out of 100 people would opt in. And that's what we would tell people. But then we launched this quiz and the quiz converted at 75%. So 75 out of 100 people opt into the list. And we looked at that and it was honestly a little humbling because you have all this work that you've done. You've created a beautiful website and it converts at 1%. This quiz, you think it's silly, converts at 75, and it's like, wow, that's incredible. So we had that data point and we knew there was this problem and the quiz was the solution. The problem was getting contacts. The solution is the quiz. And from there, that's where we got the idea. And we started building out a product where other people could make quizzes like that. But it wasn't, the market wasn't ready for it. We were pitching this idea of using quizzes to get contacts. Nobody understood how that would work. We got so many questions about whether this was like school or not, which it's not.
Yeah.
And so we ended up pitching it as a way to get contacts, but the quiz was just, we would mention that at the end. So we'd sell somebody on this new method for getting contacts. And at the very end, we'd say, oh, by the way, it's a quiz, after we had kind of already built everything. So yeah, it was super slow getting anybody on board. We really had to still treat it as if it was a consultancy. We were doing these things one at a time. We were building them manually. We were trying to build a platform at the same time. That was very difficult. We had never done that before. It was really, really slow. So that was kind of that 8 month span where we were sort of building stuff. We were sort of creating quizzes for people, but we had no incoming interest. It was just us kind of going out and trying to convince people one at a time. And that was just really tough. So That was really the hardest period in terms of knowing if we were going to make it. But we did have that crazy data point where we knew this thing worked. And we knew it worked if you did it right. So that's what kind of kept us going through that period until we did end up getting somebody to sign up and pay for it.
But how do you, so it's an education process almost, where you've got to try and educate a mass market, because you don't want to just target one or two clients. You want to be able to educate potentially thousands of potential clients at once. So I think you became quite active in writing about this and posting articles on your site. Is that the way that you found that you managed to get adoption? Is that how you managed to get the ball rolling?
Yeah, so that's actually what ended up working, was when we would approach people directly, because we started this company when we were in college, so nobody listened to us when we approached them directly, and we just got a ton of pushback and no sales. But when I started to write about it, and I started to explain how it works, and get really into the numbers behind it, the psychology, we had some data points to go off of, that's when we started to attract people and pull them in. So I wrote 100 articles about all this stuff. And right around the 100th article, somebody finally came and signed up from reading one of those articles. So it took a long time.
Did you feel though that you were taking a bit of a risk by exposing how this stuff works? Was that the only way that you could create the credibility that what you were doing was real?
It's definitely a risk, and the risk is real. We've had so many competitors pop up and just copy my articles to create products. They have gone to the point where they actually use screenshots of my articles in their articles or in their actual product marketing. And it's insane. So the risk is real. And yes, people will rip that off and completely copy it. It's happened maybe 10 times now. So an insane amount of times. But at the same time, you'll get the right people to read those as well. So, you know, one of our early on clients was the American Red Cross, and their director of social media had read one of those posts. He called me and said, "Hey, I want to talk about this." And we talked about it for a while, and then they signed up and they've been using us for almost 4 years now. So you do get the right people, but you're also going to get people that are going to read those and rip off everything you do.
But it'd be interesting to find out what's happened to your competitors, whether or not without the same drive and determination that you have, whether you can actually make a business work in this space if you're copying someone else's idea, because you don't have that same spark that you have. So
yeah, it lasts anywhere from 1 to 3 years. That's how long we can expect a competitor to last when they replicate everything we've built up to the point we're at and then start selling it using a lot of advertising and gimmicky stuff. So this has happened, like I said, about 10 times. And we've already seen the first wave come and go. So the first 1 to 3 year span, there was three or four that started up, shut down. Then there was another wave that came along. There's three or four that started up. They're still going, but some of them are petering out. One in particular raised $9 million and they're about to shutter and fold. We're getting a lot of clients that are very unhappy with the way they're being treated over there, and they're switching over to us. And then there's a brand new wave that started about a year ago, and they're still doing pretty well. They copied everything we had done up to that point and replicated it, and they're doing a lot of Facebook advertising. They're doing okay, but we continue building new stuff and learning how to get better and using the data that we have to make a better and easier to use product. So in my mind, it's always going to keep happening. Every couple of years, there'll be a new wave that comes in, copies all the stuff we have. But then the problem is they're not innovating. They're not creating anything new. And one of our mantras as a company is never stop innovating. So we continue moving forward, whereas they're going to be stuck. They're going to be stagnant, and we're just going to be up here and we're going to keep going, whereas they're not going to. And people realize that and they get tired of it. And then eventually they switch off and come over to where we're at.
But what you're doing is brilliant in the literal sense, because you've taken an idea which you fully believed in. You spent probably every penny that you had until you got that traction, went through the plateau period where it's actually worse because you think, is this as good as it's going to get? You know, when you hit that sort of 200 mark, and then, but you still keep going. And then without outside funding, you manage to break through. Where you are now is you've got a huge pile of user data, which that's where the real value begins to come in, I suppose, because you can start predicting what outcomes are going to be. So that's where you begin to really create the space between you and your competitors. But the most important thing is that you're demonstrating that being a true entrepreneur, as opposed to being a Me Too copycat, it doesn't matter how much funding you get, unless you've got that drive and the innovation, then you know, it doesn't matter where you are or what you, how good the idea is, then it doesn't have that same chance of success.
Yeah. I mean, it's been really amazing just to look back on my own journey and kind of see how some things have become cemented and other things have gone by the wayside. And the things that have become cemented and grown are the things like good habits and becoming more efficient and learning when to delegate and when to do something myself, how to get really good at things that you're bad at. All these kind of things that go into being an entrepreneur. And it's crazy to think about, you know, somebody who's really far down the line, like an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos, and how quickly they can innovate. You know, Jeff Bezos can spin up a new company that's worth $10 billion in a couple of years. And that's because they've spent their whole lives getting better at doing things. And that sounds weird or cliche, but at the same time, that's really all there is to it. So at this point, what I've learned and what really sets us apart is that we continue getting better at getting better.
Yes.
In whatever we're going after. And it's really, I'm not worried about our competition anymore, because I know that the only reason we are going to falter or have struggles is if we stop doing that, but we're starting to build it into the way that we operate, our culture, that we continually learn from our mistakes, learn what we did well, learn what we didn't do well, and just improve on that. And if you keep doing that process, you just get more and more efficient, more powerful as you go.
And your competitors almost are there making sure that you stay on track, that it keeps you keen, and it gives you that feeling that we must innovate. Otherwise, we will be subsumed by these people yapping on our heels.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love that competition. I love real competition where other people are coming in. They do one good new thing, you do another good new thing. And right now, we're almost kind of itching for somebody to come along and be that close competitor that really is innovating, because almost all of them right now are just copying whatever we do that's new. So we're almost itching for somebody to get into the ring that we can kind of joust with, because I absolutely love that. I love the competition when I'm alongside somebody, you know, I do some races and things like that. I'm an avid runner. And when I'm alongside somebody that is just pushing me, that's where I really get into things, and I enjoy it so much. And especially if it's in the longer run, if it's something that does take a long time to develop, even years, I love that even more, because it's just, you can get into it. It comes down to how you're living your life. You know, are you reading to learn? Are you forming good habits so that you can make sure that you do the most you can every single day? All this kind of stuff starts to play into it once you get into that competitive mode. And that's honestly one of my favorite things, is just having a really solid competitor.
And do you find that once you've, and the critical thing is finding that purpose, because is it that once you've got that purpose, once you've got that target, then you realize that things that you've been spending time on are wasting your time? Is it at that point that you can figure out what is real and what isn't? And is it then that you get single-minded?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because not necessarily single-mindedness, but the forming of good habits outside of work and working on myself outside of work actually started when we were not really doing well, when we were in those 3 years of really struggling. And I actually think the forming the good habits and getting focused and all that kind of stuff has to come first, which is really hard. And I had a coach that I meet with. I still meet with him every week. And he's helped me, good friends and family helped me with that. And I actually formed a lot of good habits and a good routine before we saw all the success. So I think that has to come first, which is honestly one of the hardest things that you can do, is get yourself to almost detach while you're in that tough space and start to kind of take control of your own life. And then the results will come in. And it didn't happen quickly. It was like a 5 to 6 month process before the results started to come in, after I had already started kind of really getting focused and having that single-minded mindset.
I think because that's really difficult to do, because it's so easy, unless things are going really well, when you're in that building phase where you don't know whether or not you're going to pivot tomorrow or whether or not what you're doing, you know, you start questioning yourself. You start thinking, am I doing the right thing? This great idea that I've got, is it actually that great? So to be able to maintain that sort of forward motion and at the same time try and develop these good habits, what advice would you give to people who are in that phase where they're building, where you have this constant questioning of whether or not you're, you know, crazy or smoking too much pot or something?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things you have to do. You have to really decide what you think is important or what is going to work, rather. So for us, it was that data point that we had from early on. And then once we started getting clients, even though we didn't have very many, we were seeing the same kind of results. People were getting 50% conversion rates, 90% conversion rates. We were hearing stories of how these quizzes were changing people's lives because their companies turned around because all of a sudden they had this lead magnet that was actually getting them customers and starting conversations for them. So I had that to rely on. And then what I also had was I knew there was a method that worked for getting clients, which was education. And I also knew that if you did enough education, you could break through and have success. Now, the challenge for me was that it was incredibly difficult. Like I said, I wrote 1,000 articles. Hmm. Now we have a team of people that writes articles on our behalf. They're influencers and affiliate partners. And so I had all these things. I had those three things. And I knew that if there was enough concerted and focused effort going into spinning up the education side of things, that we could push through and have success.
But you had a win. So the important thing, I think, was that that datum point, that 75% return, that was a win. That was a, you know, Google talk about moonshots, but they also talk about roof shots. And the idea of a roof shot is let's go for something that we can actually see because it may lead on to something massive. So how important is it to have that win and to recognize that win as something really valuable and to move on from there?
I think that's incredibly vital. And so the first thing you have to do, first step, is get somebody to pilot whatever you're doing. Get somebody to try what you're doing. And we had it lucky, not lucky, we got lucky because we worked really hard, but we had it lucky because we did have that one client who had already used our product at the very beginning. So you have to have that because that's kind of the seed. And that's the seed of what's going to end up growing. You don't know how big it's going to grow, but that's the very beginning and you have to have it before you start anything else. So that is absolutely vital. But then once you know that thing works, I think people vastly underestimate the amount of sheer effort and willpower that has to go into spinning something up and getting it up the hill. It's like pushing a boulder up the hill, and pushing a boulder up a hill is extremely difficult. So the time,
you know, it's sustained effort. It's not that one push and then it gets going.
Yeah, no. And the hill, I don't ever think that the hill goes down. I just think it gets maybe a little flatter because you have to keep that effort going. And that's what an amazing team is. So once you start bringing people in to join your team.
That's your innovate or die metaphor. That's that constant pushing. Otherwise, you know, it starts rolling back on top of you.
Exactly. Like you got to keep innovating. You got to keep hiring people that are going to exponentially increase the amount of effort and also innovation that goes into your product. And you have to keep doing all of these things. You can't let up even for a minute because, like you said, those people are yapping at your heels and they want to take what you've established. So you have to keep going and you have to keep improving and getting more efficient so you can do more in less time, but also making sure that you sustain that level of effort so that you don't start falling back down the hill.
So your 100 blog articles that you wrote before you got that first piece of traction, again, how did you find the time and the motivation? Because each article is, what, 1,000 words or something?
Yeah, about 1,000. They take anywhere from 2 to 5 hours to write. And I wrote those during my senior year of college. So
presumably you didn't flunk out of college, so you managed to...
Yeah, I almost flunked out twice, but I never actually did and I graduated.
Now so who cares?
I did that, Mom. So basically, the way that I got into that was by really enjoying the process. I actually was never an amazing writer. I could write okay, but I wasn't great at writing quickly and quality. So I got really, really, really good at writing during that senior year of college. And it came in really handy because I had a crazy thing come up the day of my very last final, which was a take-home essay. And I ended up not starting working on it until 11 p.m. It was due at midnight. It had to be 8 pages. I turned it in at 11:48 p.m. and ended up getting a B on it. So I got so good at writing that I could spin up a final paper and get a B on it in 48 minutes. Like, it was insane how much improvement happened over that time in terms of the quality and the speed of my writing. So that's what kind of hooked me in, was I just want to get really good at writing. And Matt was also...
it's the thing. If you throw yourself in, you're putting the huge amount of effort in and it's paying reward. And again, all of this is really relevant because, you know, the success of your company is based, I think, on these foundations, this ability to be incredibly determined about something, to be focused, you know, not to be tripped up. And a lot of businesses fail for a whole bunch of different reasons, but, you know, failure or things not going according to plan. So you must have countless stories where you saw results coming in which weren't what you were expecting. So despite that, you managed to, you know, plow through.
Yeah. I mean, with that writing stuff, that's one example where it just wasn't what I was expecting. You know, you get to 100 and that's a lot of time and effort and you're not seeing the results. And then we did start seeing the results with the writing. We started getting some customers. But what ended up happening with that was I was writing for Google, essentially. So I was writing for search terms. I was writing for people that were searching for how to use a quiz on social media to get new contacts, that kind of stuff. And what happened was there's just not a lot of people searching for that. And there still isn't. So what I ended up doing was taking it way too far. So like I said, I got to 1,000. I'd say probably 400 or 500 up to 1,000 really didn't do us much good because nobody was searching for the stuff I was writing for. And that's an example where that determination is not good because I kept going with something that was not working and I never took a breath. I never took a beat to stop and think about, am I wasting my time here? So that's the flip side of this kind of insane drive that I have is that you can end up wasting literally thousands of hours writing stuff or working on something that's not going anywhere, that's beating your head against a wall. So that is one part that's still tough because that was a ton of time that I ended up spending on that. And the way that we broke through was actually taking a second to think about it. Actually, I went on vacation right around this time last year. And I was like, this is not working. We've spent so much time working on these strategies that are just getting us nothing. Yes. And I took a second to stop and think about it. And I kind of went back to that innovative stage where I was actually thinking about how to solve the problem rather than trying to force a solution. And I came back and read about this thing that Adidas does where they partner with influencers and give them free shoes. And I thought, what if we just give people free access to our software and then they write articles that are like mine, but it's for their audience. And
I think you managed to bring in, was it Lewis Howes and Tony Robbins? And I noticed on your site, some of the people there, I think, I know these people.
Yeah, I mean, so many. Marie Forleo, who's awesome. Lewis Howes, Tony Robbins, all these people. Jeff Bullis, who's big in the marketing space. All of them are partners of ours. So I started approaching them and saying, you know, if you write an article like this, we'll totally give you free access to our software. That's a great deal for them because people are interested in learning about quizzes anyway. So it's not a bad blog post and it's also free software for them. So that's what ended up breaking us through to where instead of just writing for Google, now we're writing for all these other audiences and we're getting our message out there to vastly more people. And that spurned all of our growth for this year.
What advice would you give people who have a product and want to reach out to influencers but don't know where to begin?
I think, first of all, check your ego before you do anything. Because if you approach influencers and you say, I've got this great new product, you have to try it, they're not even going to open your email. You know, we've gotten so many responses from people that are like, man, we get hundreds of emails a day and I only responded to yours. And so you have to just check your ego. You're not important. You're not successful. And I love people like Gary Vaynerchuk and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who both say things along the lines of, every day I wake up and I realize that I'm not important and I have to work for what I'm going to get today. And that is the mindset you have to have if you're going to work with influencers, because you cannot go in thinking that you have this great product and they're going to want it and they're going to want to write about you in return for joining your affiliate program or whatever you have. So that's 90% of it, honestly. And if you have that mindset, then you can approach people and say, hey, I have this product. I thought it might be useful for X, Y, and Z reasons that have to do with the way that you do marketing and the type of audience that you have and the type of goals that you have. Let's talk about it. If you're interested, I can totally give you free access. All we would ask in return is that if you do like it, maybe you'd write about it, maybe you'd share it, but that's not an obligation. So only after you like it.
And this is the sort of stuff that you need to research on a case-by-case basis. You can't automate that. You can't create a bot that says, you know, because I see this all the time. People say, you know, I think LinkedIn is, you know, fabulous for that, where people say, hey, I've checked out your profile and I see you run a really successful business. Let's partner. And you go, yeah, you haven't got a clue what I do. I mean, I don't have a clue what I do, but, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, you can't do that. And you look at the most successful people that still do this. And shockingly, a lot of the people that are really, really successful and really well known still do this. They write personal notes to other people. As you get bigger, you can reach out to bigger and bigger influencers. But at the beginning, you're reaching out to people that have 500 followers on Twitter, and you are sending them a personal note. Yes. And I'm not talking about a template that you copied and changed their name. I'm talking about you looked at their website, you actually researched what they're doing, and you actually thought about how your product or service might fit into what they want to achieve. And then you wrote an email from scratch and you sent it to them.
Yes.
A personal email from your personal email. And that is the only way you can do this.
And I think you're right, because all these things, it's about engagement. It's about effort. It's about trying to connect to people and not trying to throw it over the fence. Technology is there to help us automate parts of these processes. For example, email is really good because it means you haven't got to get in your car and drive the letter over to their house. Mm-hmm. So that's a good use of automation. But everything else, you know, you've got to put the time in. You've got to try and connect. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And the returns that you're going to get from people that you actually invest in, people that you actually talk to, and you actually make a real connection with, are vastly greater. I would say 1,000 to one. Yes. Over somebody that you send some sort of templated thing, or maybe you just connect with them on LinkedIn and hope that they'll see your stuff, or they follow you on Twitter and you hope that they'll see your stuff. The amount of extra return that you're going to get when you actually take the time to talk with somebody, understand what they're working on, what they're going through, and how you might be able to help with your product or service is insanely higher than if you're doing this automated stuff that, you know, maybe they'll remember you, probably not. They see 1,000 of these things a day. But if you stop and you take that time to make a real connection, that's where you have this real power. And you don't have to do a ton of it. You can do a few a day, like 3 or 4 a day. But you keep doing that every single day for 2 years, and all of a sudden you do have a couple thousand people that are on your side. And that's your team. That's your tribe. That's your army. They want to help you. They want to share your stuff. They want to promote you. And that's how you do it. It's one at a time, actually taking the time to figure out how you can be helpful to them.
And that is the great secret, I think, of successful online marketing. The fact is, there is no secret. The fact is, it comes down to effort. It comes down to all the things you're talking about, you know, not being afraid just to keep going and keep going in the absence of feedback, not being afraid to sit there and write hundreds and hundreds of articles.
Yeah, it's effort, it's consistency, it's positivity, and it's humbleness. And if you have those elements and you learn how to just keep going and keep plodding on, when you're not, every interaction is not going to be great. You're going to get people that don't like what you have, or they're going to be irritated that you're trying to contact them, which, you know, who knows what's going on with their life. But if you just keep going and you have this consistency, it's miraculous almost. And it's not. But when you look at the results, you're like, wow, that's magic. But then you're like, oh, wait a minute. No, actually, I woke up every single day. I made sure to connect with, you know, 3 to 10 people today. Yep. With the same process that I did yesterday. And I did that every single day. And before long, you have these results. And to me, there's such a crazy analogy between that and fitness, where fitness is the exact same thing. And actually, when I started this program, when I started doing the outreach, I also started a new workout program that has a crazy amount of reps in it. You do like 1,000 reps of lifting weights every single day. And it was so awesome how I could make that mental connection between powering through this workout and also powering through these connections that I needed to make every single day. And so in conjunction, I started those two habits. And now the results on the business side have been absolutely astonishing. But in reality, it's just that I did it every single day. I did the 1,000 a day. I did the, 10 connections a day, whatever it was, every single day. And I never stopped. And you start to get really into it and you start to, tweak your process. You do a little bit more every day. You wake up a little bit earlier every day. You get a little bit more done at the end of the day. You work on your messaging just a little bit, but it's the consistency. It's not giving up when it's been 3 months and it's not going as well as you think it's going to. It's that that really pushes you through and gets you to where you need to go.
What I've found as well, which is fascinating to hear what you're saying, is that people like you who are very successful at what they do, they get to a point where they want to share that. So it becomes more than just being dollars and cents. It becomes, I've learned all of this stuff. How do I share that? You know, it's this concept of abundance rather than scarcity. Do you find that you're now at that point where all of these things that you're talking about, you want to try and deliver that message to people that are where you were maybe 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, I think if somebody had been really on me about this back 3 or 4 years ago, it may have changed the trajectory of how things played out. Maybe not. Maybe it was my own head and I needed to kind of make some changes in my life before this was ready to happen. But yeah, I mean, I think anytime...
You talked about the importance of you have people supporting you and friends and family.
Yeah. So, I love that. I mean, I love that. I mentor, I live next to UC Berkeley. So I mentor the startup program over there and I meet with teams and say the exact same thing we've talked about today about the consistency and the humbleness and just, pushing through, but also making sure you are innovating and not getting stuck in all these kinds of things. So I love being able to pour back in and talk to people that are in college or they're just getting started, or maybe they're getting started later in life with entrepreneurialism, that kind of thing. And honestly, there's nothing to hold back, because just like I found with writing articles, people are going to copy you, or maybe they're going to impersonate you or whatever they're going to do. But at the end of the day, as long as I keep improving, it just doesn't matter. So I'm more than happy to share literally everything I've learned, all the good stuff, all the bad stuff. And the more that I think that can be spread, the better.
And Interact, where do you see Interact in a year's time?
Yeah, I honestly think it's about to hit another growth spurt. We are seeing just the craziest stories come up. Almost every day now, something just absurd happens. We'll be at a huge conference. We'll be, featured on some publication. We were just in Inc. magazine a few weeks ago.
Fantastic.
We'll be, we'll get a giant client. We'll get, these amazing write-ups about us. And it's happening at such a pace now that it's starting to build up to another growth spurt, I think is what's going to happen. So a year from now, I fully expect we'll have in the thousands of paying customers. We're about to hit 1,000 right now. So I think it's going to maybe triple in the next year based on kind of the momentum that's continuing to build.
And it's great. And you can see the pathway. I can visualize this, the idea, the win, the hard work, the credit cards, the maxed out, the staring yourself in the mirror going, what am I doing? And the next win. And it's wonderful to see that trajectory of success and all of the solid work and foundation that went into it.
Yeah, it's there's no way around it. You have to have that journey. You have to have that pathway to get to where you are. And I think, the people that do get some sort of instant success, they really don't know what to do with it, because at this point, and I'm certainly still learning so much every day, there's this great principle that goes like, the more you learn, the less you know, because you just start to learn all the things you don't know. So that's also where I'm at right now. But at the same time, I just feel so much more confident in our ability to continue growing, to continue innovating, to continue you know, pushing forward because of all that time and effort that we had to put in, you know, in the past to get us to where we are now.
Well, that's astonishing. Well, what a brilliant story, and it's great just to watch it unfold. And we'll talk about the website at the end and how to, people can get hold of you. But it's, you know, it's a fabulous site. It's intuitive, and it's the sort of thing that I want to get stuck into. So, you know, the minute we finish this, I'm going to be looking around because I can see exactly how that would work with anything that we're trying to do, where you're trying to build a community of people that, you know, really are aligned with your interests rather than trying to, you know, guess and rely on third party audiences.
Yeah, exactly. It's such an amazing tool just to start conversations, because really that's what it is. It's this back and forth. It's a scripted conversation through the quiz, but after that you can obviously continue on and connect with somebody in person and talk about what they thought of all that kind of content and the questions and those types of things. So I just love that it's facilitating more real human interaction through technology, which is amazing to me.
Which is brilliant. But now, which is, you know, the most important thing about anything you've ever done in your life right now is the next 10 questions.
Because this
forget about all this crazy, unicorn business.
Important. Yeah.
So this is my questionnaire that I borrowed, as I keep saying. So I keep thinking, oh my God, all these people that listen to these podcasts, they must get so infuriated when I say every time that I borrowed it from James Lipton from In the Actor's Studio. But the only reason I say that is just in case he decides to sue me, which I think is a good investment.
So, yeah.
And I have changed it a little bit as well. But my first question to you, Josh, sitting there in the hot seat, is what is your favorite word?
Favorite word, persist.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a new one. Never had that one.
Yeah, I don't have any tattoos, but if I get one, I will probably get the word persist tattooed on me somewhere.
Fantastic. And what is your least favorite word?
Least favorite word. My least favorite word right now is empowered, because it keeps getting used in these really like backwards, cynical ways to represent like equality in tech. And I'm just so frustrated with it, because to me, it's like, just don't come in with your preconceived notions about what people are capable of based on their race or gender. Don't make up these buzzwords to seem cooler or to sell your random products or whatever. So I really get irritated by that word right now.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Is that feeling of entitlement?
Yeah.
As it were. But question number three, what are you most excited about right now?
I looked at this one before the show, and the first thing that came to mind was just every single day. I
can see, I can feel that.
Yeah. I don't know if I've used my alarm for real in like months, and I wake up at 5 a.m. So I'm usually up at 4:15, sometimes 3 a.m. just on my own. I'm just ready to go. So
in case anyone's interested, I'm not up at that time. There is something special clearly about you, Josh.
Yeah. No one is, which is why I like being up that early.
My next question, what turns you off right now?
What turns me off is people that are not working on themselves. If somebody is just not interested in improving, it's just such a turnoff, because even if you like who they are right now, you're going to continue growing, you're going to keep changing. And if they're not, it's going to be just a really tough situation. And I think there's fundamentally a problem if you're not trying to improve yourself in terms of self-esteem and confidence, all that kind of stuff. So that's one thing that really bothers me.
And what sound or noise do you love?
Sound of thunder.
So, oh, wow. Yeah, me too.
I love it. I was backpacking recently and there was a thunderstorm. It was actually kind of dangerous because it was really close to us. But at the same time,
hey, Josh can't be with us on the show because he's been mountaineering
struck by lightning twice. Yeah. But we were all like in these ponchos covered up, and the rain was just pouring down. It started hailing at one point, and the thunder was just cracking overhead, and just in this middle of this forest, nobody around. It had gotten kind of foggy because of the rain, and it was just amazing.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of brushing concrete. So I live on the 10th floor and there's a Marriott across the street. And every single morning at like 5 a.m. when no one else is awake, they brush the concrete for some reason.
There's your alarm clock. That's why you never needed an alarm clock.
It's always after I get up. So it's like while I'm having my coffee, you know, like journaling for the morning, and they're just down there brushing the concrete. It's rough.
See that. What is your favorite curse word?
So it's not technically a curse word, but I love the word dingus.
So you're going to have to repeat that.
Dingus?
Dingus. So
is this like...
Is this a trademarked curse word? Is this something that you
create? Maybe it is, because I've never heard anybody outside the group of my college friends say the word dingus, but it's
you
basically...
Could do a survey. How many of you out there in the world have heard the word dingus?
Heard the word dingus.
A? This?
I honestly might go make that now. But yeah, it just kind of means like a goofy, like idiot. And I just think it sounds so funny to me.
It's a combination of like a dingbat and a doofus.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
You can have that. That's fine.
I'll take it. No, thank you. Thank you.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I think, well, it would have been professional football, but then I hurt myself a few times in college. So I feel like that's out of the question at this point. Also, it really was never an option. But now it would be probably something to do with fitness. So either personal training, or maybe owning a gym. I think it would be really fun.
Because you can see people grow and improve. And
yeah, that kind of like long-term improvement, which is like my favorite thing now.
And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Teacher. So my sister and my mom are both teachers. I love what teachers do. They have an amazing impact on the world. But man, the amount of patience it takes is otherworldly.
I guess, because if you're running a gym, you can probably shout at people or throw things at them because you own the gym, and if they don't, they can get out.
And also they're only there for an hour, whereas kids are with you for 7 hours a day. Like I was volunteering at career day a couple weeks ago at her elementary school, my sister's, and by the end of 7 hours, even though the kids were loving it because they were taking quizzes, it was still rough, and that was one day.
So this is a big shout out to all the teachers out there. We love
big shout out, big shout out. Well done.
My final question, Josh, is if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Yeah, so I believe that heaven exists, and the most amazing thing that could ever happen in the world is if I got to the pearly gates and he said, well done, good and faithful servant.
Fantastic. Josh, well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been just brilliant talking to you. How do people get hold of you? How do they find out more about what Interact does and the amazing work that you're doing? And you're at the cutting edge of this. So, you know, you're at page 50 of a 1,000-page novel. So this is just the beginning. So, you know, how do people get involved and get the sort of results that we were talking about?
Yeah, certainly, certainly. So the website is tryinteract.com, tryinteract.com. And then for me personally, I actually appreciate when people send real emails, just like I was preaching about earlier. So I am Josh at tryinteract.com. You can send me an email. As long as it's real and personalized, I will totally respond. I'm on email all the time. So that's how you can get a hold of me.
That's brilliant, Josh. Well, thanks again. It's been such a pleasure. And, you know, I look forward to reading more and more of your blog posts, and I'm going to do a deep dive so I can become an expert on this amazing new thing that you've discovered.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much for having me.